In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations of Little Stephen's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. Got a very special episode lined up for you today. Back when the Underground Garage crews first set sail in May, I had the opportunity to do a live Coolest Conversations with Mike Ness from Social Distortion. We spoke on board at the Stardust Theater, and after our discussion, it was followed by an acoustic set from the band. So without further ado, here's Mike Ness on your Coolest Conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
You've done some of the Outlaw Country cruises?
We've done one, yeah.
You've done one, so you're pro at this
West
stuff,
Coast.
Yeah?
Yes, whatever you say.
So, we met a long time ago, really briefly, and I don't expect you to remember this at all. This was around 1990, and you came through Athens, Georgia, and I used to work at the student radio station up there, and at that time, I was actually that was my assistantship, so I advised the students. And so they got Mike up there to do an interview, and they were all very excited. They were showing him around the studio, and I was in this production room, and I was making a mixtape. Now, I expect people here remember what mixtapes are. And what was extra awesome about the mixtape was because I had two turntables and I could put it together. But I had this record up there, it was up on the wall, and I was doing this it was a mixture of garage rock stuff and like older rockabilly stuff, and it was a Sin Alley compilation. And to the kids that worked there, I was like this old dude, right? I mean, it was like 2 years older than them, but I was completely out of their generation. And they couldn't understand why I dug that old music. And so they brought Mike in, and the program director, he's like, this is Mike Ness, and this is our graduate assistant, Manfred, and he likes his old stuff. I don't know what he's even playing. And you looked over, and you saw this compilation record, and you said, that's the only stuff I listen to.
Yeah, for a while there was it was when they were reissuing all that stuff on vinyl.
Right.
In the early 90s, yeah, and the old blues and rockabilly and country stuff. I bought it all and just absorbed it.
Exactly. I remember looking over your stuff and the stuff about your family life, and was it your dad was had the country records and your mom had the rock and roll records?
That's right, yes.
How did that work as you were growing up? Because I know at some point your folks split up, but...
It didn't work out very good.
Yeah.
No, because my father was kind of a redneck, and I wanted to have, you know, seventh grade, I had long hair and a chopper bike, and, you know, I had just seen Easy Rider, the movie, and it changed my life. The youngsters ain't seen it yet. Well, if you want to ride a chopper, you got to see that movie, okay? It changed my life. I was already introduced to the counterculture, reminiscent of the 60s, late 60s, so it was only natural that I fell into punk rock. But, yeah, my father didn't dig. I remember bringing home a Cheech and Chong album in, like, fifth grade, and he was fucking pissed. He was like... No, that's educational.
So the band started when you were about 15, right? You tried to play music.
Well, no, I mean, I started playing guitar at 11, 12.
That's what I was getting at. So first, guitar is... So who are you living with at that point? Is that the dad and the stepmom when you're playing guitar?
I think my parents were still together at
okay.
that point.
You've got obviously, you're feeling a connection to music from the stuff that's played in the house, but what possessed you to even want to play guitar?
Oh, well, that happened at 5 years old.
Well, what happened when you were five
years
old?
Well, they used to leave us with babysitters a lot, you know, because they both worked, or both of them were alcoholics. My father got sober when I was 5, but he was still a rattlesnake. So, you know, I could tell you, I'm staying at this, we lived in this old Grove house in Fullerton in the back house we rented. And there was an elderly woman who babysat us in the front.
Yeah.
And she had all these spare bedrooms. And in one of the spare bedrooms, there was a radio. And then on the walls was all this religious, like, nudity. I mean, like, and you know, for a 5-year-old kid, you know, you're like, even, you know, Christ on the cross, you know, it's sexual. It's kind of, and all the breasts and the, you know, showing flesh.
Yeah.
And then I'm listening to the radio, which is the late 60s. So it was sex and drugs and rock and roll, just not the drugs yet.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. This is awesome. Yeah. Now I want to live this. Yeah.
But there, so it wasn't like a particular song that you heard that started that?
No, I mean, it would have been several songs from that period, you know, Stones, Creedence Clearwater, Beatles, you know, even some of that 50s doo-wop stuff, and yeah.
What is this? So you've got that as kind of a, you want to do music, and then you start doing punk stuff, and so that is like the Sex Pistols? Is that the thing?
Yeah, I mean, so I got thrown out of the house when I was 15,
right.
And then around 16, I think, or 17, I heard the Pistols, and it was like kind of a graduation, because I always kind of like went from like, you know, the next biggest guitar sound, you know.
Yeah.
For a while it was Mick Ronson, and then it was Kiss, and then it was the Pistols.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, and the Pistols really sounded like how I felt inside.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they were expressing how I felt inside, even though I didn't have a queen or grow up in London. It's just that just that attitude and that.
So you had been listening. You were familiar with, like, Mick Ronson's playing and that sort of thing, but it just didn't resonate as much.
From 5 years old on was just collecting records and listening to albums and sitting and looking at them for hours and just absorbing every bit of it. Yeah.
So you're kicked out, and you're just kind of couch surfing. Is that it? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes, sir.
So how are you? I mean, how are you putting yourself? How are you getting by, man?
Well, I mean, you know, I was kind of forced to rely on the kindness of other families.
Yeah.
And they took me in, but it didn't work out very good because me and their kid were, you know, this particular family, and for one was like all these older brothers and older friends who were all like dealing in the black market and stuff. And they lived in this really nice neighborhood, but they were like criminals. So I was like exposed to all that, you know, and I just, hey, this is the same thing as the bedroom, you know, it's like, this is cool, you know?
Well, how does this tie into like this whole, I kept reading about this black hole apartment thing?
That was my first apartment, yeah.
Okay, so, all right.
Yeah. It was right when I dropped out of high school.
Okay.
Yeah, I got an apartment. And
who wrote the song about those? Was it the Adolescents or something?
The Adolescents, yeah. Kids of the Black Hole, yeah.
Yeah.
That was my apartment, yeah. It was a den of iniquity, yeah.
So when you're in the black hole, living in the black hole, is the band active then? You're playing actively? Do you have other guys together with you?
We were kind of just still forming.
Yeah.
Because this would have been 1979, 80.
Yeah.
And some of the guys I was in the band with at that time didn't think I wanted to bring Dennis in to play guitar, Dennis Dinell. And they didn't think he was good enough. But he was like my partner in crime. Like it was him that was... We were going to shows when we were still in high school, driving 45 minutes to L.A. Yeah. to all these underground clubs and seeing these punk bands. So I wanted him in the band. He had good style. He looked cool, and he was a good, you know, moral support. So I taught him how to play guitar, and then we just got a different drummer and a different bass player.
But, so you said you taught him how to play guitar.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Right, so you're showing him some chords and things.
And then we made our first single in 1980, yeah.
And then, so you had a couple of albums that came out before You got signed.
Yes.
So what was the, and then you had taken like a break somewhere in here. So what got you signed to the label? Why were they suddenly interested in signing you guys?
Well, there was a little break. You know, in 1984, the year of 1984 was particularly bad because, you know, I had went from being kind of a teenage alcoholic to a heroin addict. And you have to support a habit, you have to commit petty crimes, and you have to kind of be a con artist and a liar and a thief and a... Yeah, I was all those things. I was a derelict.
Right. Well, you learned all those lessons when you went into that family.
Well, I was lucky that I went through that before we really had any success because, I didn't have a handler, you know, cooking my dope up for me or I wasn't staying at the St. Regis Hotel or anything like that. Yeah. I started at the bottom and ended up even lower. So that really helped me hit my bottom quickly.
So were you clean by the time this, the self-titled album, the 1990 album comes out? Okay.
So what happened, and I got sober for the final time in October of 85. Mm. And, 23 years old. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I got this work ethic out of nowhere. I don't know where I got it.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing how much energy that you have when you're not out there, hustling.
Well, you were spending the energy someplace else.
Yeah, it's all your energy. And then so you get clean and you have all this energy and you're starting to get paid like a professional. So you want that to last. You want to earn that and show people that they're getting their money's worth. And so I got serious and by 88 had written Prison Bound, and that was the record that first got some real radio airplay.
Yeah. So when these, what is it? It was the Social Distortion album, Somewhere Between Heaven and Hell. Both those albums went gold. So here you were just a couple of years ago, prior to that, you know, as you said, like at a bottom rung. That must have been mind-blowing.
It was about 5 years before the self-titled, from when I got clean and... It was good. I mean, I had to, you know, we weren't making any money at that time. So all these people in the program, the AA and the NA, were just saying, get a job, asshole. And I'm like, really? A job? The last job I had was at a porno shop, you know, when I was 19. So it was a new concept. But, you know, I learned to trade. I learned how to paint houses and for the first 5 years of my sobriety, and we got signed to a major label, and I got to quit my day job, and it was the best day ever. I think I told that boss to take his job and shove it.
So there's all this, that rough time, if there's a positive thing out of that, you were able to channel that into songwriting, into...
Well, yeah, now you can feel.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not...
Well, you must get this all the time when people are... You know, relating to what you've written and what you've done, and then they want to express that back to you. You know, they've heard the song; it's resonated with them. Well, how do you feel about that? And if there's, you know, they're giving you a one-on-one, what can you respond? I mean, what can you say?
Well, I mean, the most common thing I get is that your music got me through some hard times.
Yeah.
You know, they may not have gone through exactly the situations that I was in, but they can relate to the feelings and overcoming them and becoming stronger. And I just tell them it got me through it as well. Yeah.
So let's ask you about a question. Here was something you said about the Social Distortion album. I wrote a record I liked. I hope people would like it. And this was in the context of you taking a chance, right? Putting yourself out there. So does that still apply to your songwriting process? Are you still taking chances?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't tell you what is trending right now.
Yeah.
Or what is popular. I mean, it's not that I don't like it. I just don't think that way.
Yeah.
I still go back to the past for inspiration. Most of my idols are dead, but yeah, the records are still there. Prison Bound was a huge difference from Mommy's Little Monster. And then the self-titled record was a lot different than Prison Bound. I felt that the punk scene was kind of stereotyping itself by that period, the late 80s.
The 80s, yeah.
And I feel like bands like us and the Chili Peppers and all these other bands, X, you know, needed to kind of step aside and, well, we made a hard right, you know? We made a hard right.
Yeah.
It's just like, I want to do something that's different. I don't want to do the same thing that everyone else is doing. I can't relate to that. So that's really when I started bringing in that, you know, we're an American band, bringing in the American roots to the punk music. And we weren't the first band to do that. Yeah. A lot of the bands I grew up with, like X and the Blasters and the Gears, and we're all doing that. But, it worked. And I didn't know if people were going to like it, but I liked it. And, you know.
Well, you mentioned something now, a lot of these idols being gone, and you guys do a great version of Ring of Fire and Johnny Cash song. Did you ever meet Johnny Cash?
I did, yeah. In the night when I was recording White Light, White Heat.
White Trash.
White Trash, yeah. Yeah, he was in the studio next door, and I just had like a minute to take my guitar over there.
Yeah.
And he was in there eating dinner, watching some evangelical guy, you know, on the TV. And
yeah,
I said, sorry to bother you, man, but we're the guys that cover Ring of Fire. Can you sign this real quick? And he was really cool.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I still have that guitar.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, I know you guys are going to play a couple of songs in a minute. Let me ask you this first. So there was kind of a scare recently with cancer. You had a tonsil cancer.
Yes, sir.
How are you? How are you doing? You're doing, I mean, you're talking all right, but you're getting healthy?
Well, I'm alive.
That's half the battle right there. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's never in anyone's plan,
right,
you know, to hear that news. But yeah, it was brutal. It was brutal. It was a brutal surgery. It was brutal treatments. And we were halfway done with this record that's, you know.
Right.
And once I was done and got a clean bill of health, I'm still kind of catching up right now with, like, deadlines and, you know, trying to get this next record out. People are sick of hearing about it. You know, they want it. But I can tell you, I'm real happy with it. And,
I was watching some interview with you and the fella, and you had said that Give Me the Sweet and Low Down off of Hard Times and Nursery Rhymes was like one of your favorite tunes that you'd ever written. And so on the new record, the upcoming record, it's a lot of, are other character kind of songs on there? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, this record is very back to the beginning.
Okay.
Back to the 70s, the best wave of punk. 1977 to 79, it's kind of paying homage to that period of time and going back to the beginning. And it's very also very reflective. Obviously, there was no major labels knocking at my door back then to sign us for a record. And society's reaction was very volatile to this. They tried so hard to stop us from doing this. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm the type of person, if you tell me I can't do something, I got to do it. I got to do it. I got to succeed at it. And I have to smile at you afterwards.
Do you ever say, bless your heart?
Bless your motherfucking heart.
I'm from Atlanta, but I live now in Los Angeles. Been out there since like 2006-ish, and so I made friends out there, and they talk about that first punk era, right? And depending on where they're living, they're making a distinction whether it was an LA thing or an Orange County thing. You were talking about making the drive into LA. Was there like some line between the different counties, the different punk scenes, or?
Well, I mean, yeah, sometimes, you know, you have Hollywood, which is urban.
Yeah.
And then you have Orange County, which is suburban.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think it was harder for us, believe it or not, because, yeah, you know, in Hollywood, you expect there to be freaks and walking down the street. In Orange County, you walk down the street and a carload of guys are going to drive by and call you a faggot. And you flip them off and they turn around and they come back and you got to fight. You got to fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the way it was.
So you mentioned Dennis, right?
Yes.
And so you since passed away. That was back like in 2000. So I have a band of the Woggles and we've lost a couple of guitar players over the years. So don't play guitar in the Woggles, man.
The curse.
Yeah. But it's hard, you know, you get someone to take the, first you got to get through taking the place, but then, you know, there's looking over on stage and feeling a presence and wanting to share something. And how did you deal with that initially and how is it now?
Well, I mean, he was my oldest friend. It was the first time I lost a friend. And for a little while there, a month, you know, I had just done my solo record. I had a pretty promising career going that direction.
Right, a couple of solo records.
But I started to write a song, and it was the easiest song to write because I had all the visuals in my head, but it was also the hardest song to write because if I stop and feel the emotion, I'm going to lose it. And that was Don't Take Me for Granted. And it was just basically, I decided that it would be horrible to stop this band. If it had been the other way around, I would have wanted Dennis to take this all the way. Just keep going, take it all the way, take it as far as you can. And so I kind of like, in honor of him, had a new purpose. Yeah.
And you still have Johnny with you, right? Johnny
yes.
Two Bags.
So. Yes, sir, yeah.
Okay.
He was a good, he was the guy.
How did you find him?
A freak accident. I mean, like, I had ended up in Costa Mesa out of a detox.
Yeah.
I think I had a 10-speed bike at the time to get around. And
okay.
I was riding by this house and had a bunch of kids were skating on this ramp.
Yeah.
And one of them was Johnny, and he recognized me. And then the next day he came over and he's like, I go, come on in. And he's like, he fucking puts a joint in his mouth and lights it up. I go, bro, bro, bro. I can't do that shit right now. I can't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But we became friends and he eventually made it into the rooms. And yeah, I mean, not to put him on Broadway, but yeah.
Yeah. So my boss, is Steven Van Zandt, and this is like his first cruise, but he couldn't be here because his boss called him up and said, no, you got to get over here we got rehearsing to do overseas, right? So, but you're familiar with Mr. Springsteen, right?
Yes.
He's a fan of Big Band
Music.
And so, you called him up on stage one time first, or did he? And then he returned the favor, or how did you guys meet?
Well, actually, he's singing a verse with me and my solo record, "Misery Loves Company." Yeah, and that's him doing the second verse, and I thought he killed it.
Yeah.
And ever since then, we just kind of kept in touch, and yeah.
It's pretty cool to be up on stage with the boss. Huh?
Yeah, next time, though, I'm going to sing one of his songs. I want to do that song, "The Rising."
Okay.
I think it's a badass song, yeah.
Yeah.
You tell him that for me, okay?
I will.
Tell him.
I will. Well, you know, I may have to go through the great do-ragged one. I have to go through Steve.
Sometimes you have to go through Steve, and I've had to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great liaison.
He is. He does do this thing where he gets this kind of thing going.
Yeah, hey,
so let me, the way that would work.
Yeah, so Mike wants to sing this song. What do you think?
The way that works, too, is that everybody gets an NY. So Manfred becomes Manny, and you would be Mikey.
Mikey.
Well, speaking of playing, I think we're about ready to bring up these other musicians.
Let's bring them out.
You're
gonna
run.
Yeah.
Got several songs.
Bring out these fools. Manfred, so nice to talk with you.
Yes, so nice to speak with you.
Okay. Love is a burning thing. It makes a fiery ring round my wild desire. I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, down, down. The taste of love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I'm before you like a child. Oh, but the fire went wild. I fell into a fiery fire. I went down, down, down. Went higher. It burns, burns, burns. That ring of fire. That ring of fire. Love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I bore you like a child. Oh, but the fire was wild. I fell into a fiery fire. I went down, down, down. The flames went higher. And it burns, burns. Thank you. Uninvited feelings, they come without a warning, and they stay too long. I don't wanna feel, but I run and obey. Just as strong. I've been waiting, waiting for some kind of a sign. I try to separate my body from my mind. I watch the clock. As the second hand slowly goes strolling by, I don't wanna feel, Well, I once, times come to die. I've been waiting, waiting for some kind of a sign. I try to separate, try to separate my body from my mind. This feeling just ain't right. And though I try to just can't hide cold feelings in the night. Yeah, I got faith, but sometimes fear just weighs too much. I don't wanna feel cold winds blowing through me with an empty touch. I've been waiting, waiting for some kind of a sign. I try to separate. Separate my body from my mind. Cold feelings in the night. You know this feeling just ain't right. Just can't hide cold feelings in the night. Cold feelings in the night. Cold feelings in the night. Young, I was invincible. I found myself now thinking twice. I never thought about no future. It's just a roll on the dice. But a day may come when you got nothing to lose, and just when you think you're done paying dues, you say, so, dear God, what have I done? And hope it's not too late, cause tomorrow may never come. Reach for the sky, cause tomorrow may never come. Reach for the sky, cause tomorrow may never come. A Yesterday is history, and tomorrow's a mystery. But baby, right now, it's just about you and me. You can run, you can hide, just like Bonnie and Clyde. Reach for the sky, never gonna die. I thank the Lord for love that I have found, and hold you tight, cause tomorrow may never come. Reach for the sky, cause tomorrow may never come. Reach for the sky, cause tomorrow may never come. Please take this moment. Try if you can make it last. Don't think about no future, and just forget about the past and make it last. Reach for the sky, cause tomorrow may never come. Thank you so much. I'm just going to say this is a working class song for the working class people. Work hard now. Put the food on the table. You're working for the man. We don't even know your name. That's the way it goes when you're down here with the rest of us. You might lose now your beautiful children, your happy home. And your beautiful wife. That's the way it goes when you're down here with the rest of us. You'll suffer hard now as you bury your loved ones. You'll suffer hard now when you lose your best friend. That's the way it goes when you're down here with the rest of us. That's the way it goes, and I know how you feel. Thank you.
like that? Who wants to hear that again?
Social Distortion here in Little Steven's Underground Garage with an acoustic set. They performed on the inaugural Underground Garage cruise back in May of this year. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Mike Ness for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations and for the band for performing. Thanks also to Sammy Cementa and Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. In April of 1968, the Zombies released their seminal album Odyssey and Oracle, and it's being reissued this year on vinyl and in mono, just like it came out back in the day. Joining me to talk about the reissue and also discuss this recent Zombies documentary, Hung Up on a Dream, is frontman, lead singer Colin Blundstone. He's my guest next time around for our Coolest Conversations here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.